You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
First Nations listeners are advised that the following program may contain the names and voices of our mob who have passed on to the dreaming.
Hello, listeners. You're listening to Yilman on 3CR, 855 AM your dial, 3cr.org.au. Streamed online and via the playback service, Nayaga Kiran. And today we've got a few things to talk about. First off, though, I'm going to play a recording of a speech by Senator Lydia Forbe in Parliament that happened, I think, last week or maybe start of this week. If you tuned in last week, you would have heard me talking a bit about the recent terrorist attack and attempted mass casualty event that happened over in Borloo, or Perth as it's otherwise known, where a white supremacist threw a homemade bomb into the crowd at the Invasion Day rally. Luckily, it didn't go off. Very grateful and thankful that it didn't actually detonate. But, you know, it's been an absolutely disgusting incident, and the way that the media and the government has responded has also been quite disgusting. But yeah, I've got a quick speech here from Senator Forbe that she made in Parliament in regards to the incident. We're going to go to that first.
On January 26, families, elders and children gathered in Borloo, Perth on Wujuk Noongar Wujja. They came peacefully in remembrance to grieve and to heal on a day of mourning for First Peoples. During the smoking ceremony, a man with hate in his heart and the intention to kill our people took his position on a walkway above the crowd. He was armed with a homemade fragmentation bomb, packed with ball bearings, screws, and explosive liquid. He threw it into the crowd below, where it landed among our elders and children. The bomb smouldered, smoke rising from its fuse, mixing with the smoke of ceremony, our healing smoke, carrying the memory and strength of our ancestors, tainted by this poison plume of racism and hate. The bomb, thankfully, did not detonate. It could have caused many deaths. Our elders say it was the protection of our ancestors, present through ceremony, holding our people when the worst was intended. Let us be absolutely clear. This should be treated as an act of terror. It was a deliberate act of hate, directly targeting First Peoples on our day of mourning. But that was just the beginning of the harm. In the days that followed, as those who were there and First Peoples across this country came to understand what had nearly occurred, the trauma deepened. The trauma was met with something familiar: silence, minimisation, and indifference, another form of violence. The attempted bombing was an act of horrific, overt hate and racism. What followed was the quieter, insidious thrum of the entrenched systemic racism that shapes this country. Decisions were made in newsrooms, in ministerial offices, in the daily rhythms of power about whether this was urgent, whether it mattered, whether our lives mattered. There was no emergency press conference from the Prime Minister, no proactive statement of condemnation, no solidarity offered to First Peoples left reeling from this attempted attack of mass violence. The Prime Minister's only comments came when he was questioned at an unrelated press conference. Since then, the Prime Minister has held multiple press conferences, and not once has this attack been raised by journalists. They have not asked, pressed, or pursued. The Coalition and others who were so very vocal in response to the Bondi attack have been notably absent. The court has suppressed the attacker's identity, accepting arguments about his safety in prison because so many of our people are incarcerated. Once again, First Peoples are framed as a threat rather than recognised as victims. All this silence matters, and it is loud. It sends a message that our lives are not valued, that our safety is not taken seriously. So today, I ask this place and everyone listening to pause and reflect, to ask yourselves honestly, why was this not seen as deserving national attention? This motion is about bringing this country together. It's about recognition and responsibility. It is about condemning hate and racism consistently, no matter who the victim is or what colour their skin is. It asks the Parliament to say clearly to First Peoples, we hear you, we believe you, we recognise that racism and hatred directed at you are real and rising. It calls on this Parliament to commit to urgent action to address racism, hate and violence against First Peoples.
Thank you, Senator Thorpe. Senator McCarthy.
That was a recording from Parliament where Senator Thorpe brought up the issue of the attempted terrorist attack over in Borloo. And she raised some very good points, you know, like why has the media been so silent? Why has the government been so silent? Why is the identity of the attacker being prioritised over the victims? You know, absolutely disgusting, but, you know, to be honest, it's to be expected in this colony, the way it behaves, the way it treats First Nations people, and the way that it remains silent or excuses and justifies and makes, you know, other disgusting remarks. Disgusting for us, I should say, you know, remarks in regards to the white terrorism that is launched against First Nations people every day here in this colony. There is a statement as well from somebody who was apparently there at the time, a bit of a first-hand account that I want to read out. It goes, I was right there when police bagged evidence. They just picked it up, the bomb. They walked through the crowd and stood at the back of the stage and threw it in a hot van behind the stage. Surrounded by people, no equipment, no gear, no PPE, nothing. It was tougher 20 minutes before they had made an announcement and they told us that there was a person who was a threat to our safety in the crowd, then forced us into a blocked off area, not big enough for the 2,000 plus people, I remember thinking, is this fella squashed in here with us? Kids were crying. Elders were separated from family due to mobility aids. There was no communication, no compassion, no direction or planned responses. People with disabilities were knocked to the ground and left. I saw a woman using a wheelchair who couldn't get through the way they were telling us to go, but was being forced forward into the crowd crush. People sitting in cafes, not being evacuated, only us. We asked police where we were meant to go because they had both ends blocked and wouldn't let us march to the gardens as planned. They just pushed and pushed. Then the organisers started drumming and the young ones started singing and the crowd stayed calm and chanted to hold pride. We didn't know what danger we were in until we watched the news. You ever seen a bomb response where evidence was just picked up, bagged and thrown in the van? Not even a vest in sight. It bounced in off a young girl's leg. Her leg broke the fall. Attendees told police and they just threw it in the van. I literally watched them walk by me with what I now know. What I now know was an unexploded device. You know, that's the end of the statement that I received from somebody who was, you know, apparently there on the day. And, you know, it really draws into question, you know, why the response was as it was. You know, why weren't the police there in their bomb squad gear? You know, why did they respond in a way where they just push, and I've heard this account from a few people actually, you know, where they just push the crowd, the Invasion Day crowd, you know, into this tight space, and they pushed them in such a way that there was, you know, a very real risk of a crowd crush happening. Yet they were going to the cafes and the businesses that were surrounding the area and, you know, just politely going in there, knocking on the doors, politely going in and, you know, asking people to leave in a polite and orderly fashion. You know, there was no risk of crowd crush for the non-Indigenous people that were enjoying their Australia Day cafe brunches. It was just for the First Nations people and their allies and accomplices who were at this Invasion Day march. And, you know, why didn't they respond in a more serious matter to the bomb? You know, they just picked it up and carried it along and chucked it in the back of a van, an unexploded device. You know, it's very suspicious, if you ask me. You know, on a completely unrelated note, you know, kind of, let's not forget that up in New South Wales last year, there was the so-called caravan bomb threat, which later turned out to be a hoax. You know, something that the New South Wales government knew was a hoax at the time, but still treated it like a terrorist act and still, you know, announced it as a foiled terrorist plot. And on the back of that, they brought in all these new restrictive laws. You know, it's very suspicious, if you ask me. There's a lot of suspicious activity happening lately in the colony. A lot of new laws being rushed through as a result. You know, you got these so-called hate speech laws, which is, you know, very ironic considering the people that they're targeting as a result of these hate speech laws. You know, targeting people who are talking about genocide. They're not targeting racist white supremacists who are, you know, calling for violent acts against Indigenous peoples and against migrants. And, you know, I also question to what degree did the authorities know about this attempted terrorist attack over in Borloo before it happened? Because, you know, at the end of the day, we've got to remember, Australia, you know, it might not be as overtly surveilled as some other places in the world, you know, like the United States or Israel. But Australia has quite a lot of surveillance and intelligence operations that are happening here. And it's very much swept under the rug. You know, most people, for example, could only really name ASIO. You know, people know about ASIO and they know what ASIO does and that it exists. But they don't know about the other ones. You know, there's plenty of other intelligence organizations that operate in this colony. You know, there's at least six core intelligence agencies that make up the so-called National Intelligence Community. You know, you've got the Office of National Intelligence. You've got the ASIO, as I just mentioned, the Australian Security Intelligence Organization. You've got the Australian Secret Intelligence Service, ASIS. You've got the Australian Signals Directorate, the ASD. You've got the Australian Geospatial Intelligence Organization, AGO. You've got the Defence Intelligence Organization. You know, there's a bunch of other organizations that intersect with intelligence as well, like the AFP and the Border Force and AUSTRAC, which is the Financial Intelligence. You know, there's a lot of different intelligence organizations here, not to mention all the international stuff that we're tied into, stuff like the Five Eyes Intelligence Sharing. You know, we've got Plan Gap here as well, which is outside of the continental United States. It's the most significant and most important Western spy base in the entire world. You know, that operates out of this colony where they listen to all these people's communications and they track all these people with drones and satellites and whatever else. You know, why didn't they know that this attack was going to happen over in Borloo? And it's very suspicious to me that it could get to that point in the first place, and then that's the police response to it. And it's definitely stuff for people to think about and to question. You know, like, on the one hand, though, you know, as much as this might seem like a false flag attack, I'm not going to necessarily say it was, because it's also just as easily explained through racism and negligence. You know, the fact that they didn't care if bombs are thrown at blackfellas at the end of the day, they didn't care what happens to blackfellas. You know, that's why they haven't capitalized on it like they did with other bomb hoaxes of recent times. You know, why they didn't use it to rush through a bunch of new laws over in Western Australia and, you know, to condemn and denounce groups of people. And it's just as easily explained through that racist negligence. You know, don't get me wrong. But whether it's racist negligence or whether it's something more insidious, at the end of the day, the result's still the same. And it's something that is still very suspicious to me. We've got about 10 minutes left on the show. I'm going to play another two songs, and then I'll be back again next week to yarn about something else. I actually wanted to get somebody on the show today. Unfortunately, I don't believe they are available today, but hopefully they'll be available next week. And I'm going to actually quickly use this time to quickly plug a project that I've been a part of over the last, 6 to 12 months now, which is the next edition of the Sunday Paper. Now, if you've never heard of the Sunday Paper, you should go Google it. Go have a look at their website. Go look at the work they do. It's a project that is run by some good friends and comrades of mine. And it's something that very much tries to counter a lot of the Zionist-owned media, including the, you know, Zionist-owned so-called left-wing media in this colony, and to prevent a radical, uncompromising point of view. The latest edition has now gone on pre-order. That'll be edition 4. I am proud to announce that I was actually the commissioning editor for this edition, and the topic is the pitfalls of liberalism, you know, taken from Kwame Ture's essay, The Pitfalls of Liberalism, which again, you know, something you should go and read if you're unfamiliar with. But yeah, it's a very great edition. We've got quite a lot of works in there that very much critique and name and identify liberalism as it exists and operates today in this colony and across the broader West. We've been very lucky to have authors contribute from right across the world, you know, not everywhere, obviously. We've got a limited amount of people we can fit in, but we've got authors from Turtle Island, we've got authors from the continent of Africa, you know, we've got stories from places like Kanaki, and stories from right here at home in this colony as well. It's something that I definitely 100% recommend you go and pre-order today, go and check that out. But yeah, hopefully next week I'm going to have another one of the editors come on the show with me to have a bit more of a discussion, not just about the edition, but why this edition exists, you know, what the need for it was in the first place. There is very much a need for it, but yeah, we'll go into that next week.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.